Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? This is the 8 o'clock hour, and this is a Wednesday evening, the live version of the K.E. Thompson Live Show. I am the person that's called the Son, Eric Citizen Payne. K.E. Thompson's on assignment in heaven, and we are here talking about the talk that's gone on within the last week. And Eric Garner's family finally got a little justice, one small step towards justice in making and seeing that Pantaleo, the officer who was primarily responsible, or at least used the chokehold to a certain degree, got fired. And that's one small step in real justice being done for the Garner family. I think all of the cops involved should get some sort of firing or something, some sort of disciplinary action. But that's just me on that particular tip. And, you know, what other news real quick before we welcome the brothers? The Chosen One, we want to talk about that. Trump called himself that, the Chosen One. Wow, that's special. And also told Jewish folks they're disloyal to their own homeland if they vote for Democrats. And then he got mad at Denmark because they won't sell him Greenland. So, you know, we've got a lot of stuff we want to get down with. I'm going to welcome Brother Byron Saunders to the mix, see what's happening, and let him tell you what he thinks about some of these things. As soon as this thing loads up. Yeah. There we go. Brother Byron, go ahead, brother.
Okay. Hey, Eric, how are you, my friend? You know I'm still in New York, on the boards, as we say, tomorrow night, my one shot only. Hey, I get 5 minutes of fame and glory on a 10-minute piece. How about that? Mm. Piece called The Goblet. And this is part of the Broadway Bound Theater Festival. So that's tomorrow, one night only, August 22nd at 8 p.m. This piece is written by Liz Amadio. It's at the Theater Row on Broadway, on 42nd Street, 410 West 42nd Street. It's what is considered to be the theater district in what they call off-Broadway, right on 42nd Street. So, Eric, I get a chance to walk the boards tomorrow night, you know?
That's fantastic, man. That's no joke over there. I mean, that's to anybody that, you know, the acting profession, the entertainment, it's kind of got a different vibe now. I think technology has made things a little bit different, but there's still people who choose to do it in more of a traditional fashion. And I don't know, people like us, maybe people that went to college for acting, kind of started learning how to act on the stage. So the ultimate level or the hurdle is to go to Broadway and to perform. I mean, that's the ultimate dream, I'm sure, for most young actors that have gone to acting school or to college or whatever, is to go to Broadway. At least before they do their movies, if they want to do a movie career or something like that. But always the thing was the ultimate for the people who consider themselves real actors. And, you know, that old school kind of generation that was inspired by the Lee Strasbergs and the generations to come after Marlon Brando and James Dean, and where it was really, that was really a thing, you know. So that's a great thing to be on Broadway, around off Broadway, certainly in that area. Theater Row is really, that's the first level. When people say off Broadway, that's the first level of off Broadway, you know, not only from a professional standpoint, but the physical location of it is, you know, and so it's named aptly that is also a professional level on top of it.
Well, you know, Eric, it's kind of interesting because I've been in New York for the last 3 weeks, and the first piece that I did as down on the off-Broadway as part of the Broadway Bound Theater Festival was a piece called The Eve of Beltane, an Irish love story. You may remember I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I was stage managing that show. Great Broadway director, musical director, you know. So this is my second week back on the Broadway circuit. I'm feeling pretty good, you know.
That's fantastic. And, you know, it's almost, you know, I love those movies as we get off and talk about this subject because, give us a little break from the regular news. But I love old movies that talk about actors who made it on Broadway, and that's their, that's the totality of their acting existence. They're Broadway actors who continue to work on Broadway over and over again, and
yeah.
just where they live and can have the ability. Same thing with work through people who work through Juilliard, have the ability to work and live in and around the Broadway area, you know, in New York City, right there in Manhattan.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
the, kind of the ultimate experience or professional, one of the more ultimate professional levels achievements as an actor to be able to do
yeah.
that. So kudos to you, my
so this,
brother. That's
this
a good feeling.
It is. This piece is a really kind of a Alfred Hitchcock Twilight Zone episode.
Mm.
It's like about 10 minutes, three characters, and really interesting story. And it's one of three shows all in one ticket price. So you not just get a chance to see me on stage. You get two other shows that are part of the one-act series. And
mm-hmm.
These are all top-notch writers and actors and directors. So come on out and help support the arts. That's the best part about being in New York. Now, you know I'm down in the cesspool, formerly known
right.
as the swamp. You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's nice to be out of the swamp, but as we – you know, segue back to the mess that's going on in the cesspool in D.C. Oh, my goodness. So he's the one or the one? Which one is he pretending to be?
The chosen one. But before we jump off of that, what do you
yeah.
think about, you know, Eric Garner's family? You know, we have Pantaleo's being
yeah.
fired from the police force. So I think at least that's a step, even though they did that
yeah.
begrudgingly.
Yeah, they did. And they had no other choice. What's really sad and has to come under scrutiny in the microscope is once again the thumbprint of William Barr, our current Attorney General, is all on this case because the Civil Rights Division of the FBI recommended that the officer and be charged with murder, and William Barr rejected the Civil Rights Division's recommendation out of his own FBI. So we got an Attorney General who's not really about justice.
Oh, no.
He's just,
no.
His notion is just them and just us as to and just them because he has no he's not abiding by the Constitution. He has thwarted and just circumvented much of the Voting Rights Acts and the consent decree orders like the one in Baltimore, which was also about the Justice Department putting a city's police force under review. And they scuttled it once Barr got in. So we have an out-of-control president. We got an out-of-control Justice Department. We got an out-of-control Senate under Mitch McConnell. And we got an out-of-control United States Supreme Court under the five current conservatives, two of which are illegally sitting as justices on the Supreme Court.
Well, there is the belief system of supremacy, of white supremacy, right? And these guys are part of that belief system of certainly their own supremacy, and also their supremacy is built upon the foundation of white supremacy as a pillar of their foundation. And so
right.
it doesn't make a difference about the Constitution and the laws to which the nation is supposed to have its standards based upon. These individuals get into the position where they abuse the power and don't care about the law. They circumvent what's the very values or the very foundations that they're sworn to uphold. I mean, the very notion of getting involved in government means you're going to uphold those rules and those principles that were established way back then as a society that was going to, you know, abide by these rules to function. And these are people who have their own belief system within that, which is the true belief system, and they just used all of that other, you know, all men are created equal and all that stuff as a ruse to continue their way of life, you know.
Well,
and they sell that.
Certainly, as we just celebrated yesterday, wasn't it the 400th anniversary of the landing on Jamestown, or Jamestown landing on us, where the first colony,
yeah.
1619, the first colony established in the Commonwealth of Virginia, in which slaves were brought to the Commonwealth at that time period. So this is the 400th anniversary of our being shipped over, not by UPS. It wasn't FedEx. It wasn't DHL. This was by way of some slave ships, y'all. And so we really haven't come a long way when you consider there's still trafficking in slave labor globally. We got slave trafficking in the prison industrial complex in the United States, and not to mention the slave trafficking that's still going on in the Commonwealth owned by the United States federal government, that being Puerto Rico, Guam, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, and also the District of Columbia, known as the nation's capital. So we have two big issues.
Well, I mean, it's the certain things that this society was built upon, and it's vulnerable to being exposed, being abused by people who gain the wheel of you know, power in society and determining which direction things go. And it's just to think about it that there are people who are so powerful, or, you know, like they say, I saw this little clip on one of the shows about the Koch brothers, that their business is within everything we physically probably use. You know, they make the products that make products. So they have an imprint in everyday life, all aspects of people's everyday life. You know, every household goods that might be used by people are made from materials that they produce, the foundation, so in some way, shape, or form. So we're talking about individuals whose wealth and power goes way beyond the collective, you know, and the desires of the collective being considered.
Right.
Who can circumvent the desires of the collective. And you see that really in Trump, and that's why I think, you know, the statement of hearing him say, "I'm the chosen one," and all this narcissistic stuff. This guy is dangerously narcissistic. I mean, he has a real kind of mental thing going on where, you know, and it's ironic to me listening to some of the analysts on some of the various talk shows and just the newscasters, and nobody really picked up on when he said that. They just roll over it like it's another one of his things that he says, you know, "I'm the chosen one, I could help China," or whatever, "I'm the only one dealing with it." But it gives you a real insight to this man's psyche, to me.
Yeah.
And every go ahead.
It's a sickness. It's a sickness. It's a pathology. You identified it as narcissism, but I think it goes beyond that as well. There's something else that's deeply rooted into a kind of a mental breakdown that thinks that he is, I'm going to go back to a biblical reference. He thinks he's Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
Pharaoh is God. Okay.
Yeah.
He thinks he's Caesar. Caesar considered himself to be a god on the pantheon of the Roman gods.
Exactly.
You know, Alexander the Great, you know, on the Greek pantheon. I mean, there are elements of the narcissism that goes deep in every one of the tyrants that have exposed themselves.
And picking
history.
Up on that, you can see him getting closer as he makes these statements, and you see him in front of the crowds. And just when, you know, I'm talking about the shots from him from the side, or when there's kind of a straight-on shot, but you can see, get a chance to have a perspective of how he's looking and absorbing what he feels is the adulation for him from a personal perspective. You know, when people up there cheering, because like being on stage and getting applause, like any type of recognition like that, there's a certain euphoria to a certain degree, and people who aren't stable might mistake that or might get wrapped up into that, where, you know, they kind of go off into the fantasy version of what that means for them. And I could see him getting ever closer and further out there. You know, they talk about a lot of his strategy and things he says, and that's fine too. There is, you know, the basic things he says, and he understands the marketing and repeating stuff and all that. But there's also some other area, gray area for me, where I can see that this guy would be the type to push things over the edge to maintain his power, or to, like a criminal would do, not to go to jail and be held accountable for his crimes. You know, I can see him talking about violence and egging people on when he loses the presidential election. He already does things that tries to, you know, the way he talks, he tries to get people set up, you know, he instigates and incites and talks around certain things. He really tries to get people set up. And that's what some Jewish people were saying, you know, it's like, you know, putting targets on us, saying we're not American enough, that we have more allegiance to Israel than America, being American citizens. And it really is, you know, that's the type of actions of someone who's trying to get people jacked up, man, you know?
Yeah, policy decisions and the so-called diplomacy that he's employing in the Middle East is not really helpful to any of the peace processes that have gone on since 1948, when the State of Israel was created by the United Nations. And ever since then, the politics have increasingly become more and more restrictive to anyone outside of the Jewish religion. And that includes some of the apartheid type of policies that Netanyahu has employed, and we talked about this last week briefly, is that they're as restrictive against the Ethiopian Jews, who Jews all around the world have a claim to the State of Israel. That's why it was created. And so if you're going to start restricting your Jewish brother by way of color, as they did in South Africa in apartheid, and the brutal regime against the Palestinians. I mean, there's a real problem here that's in the Middle East, and we're not on the right side of history for this one. This is not going
Netanyahu, like Trump, is a right wing conservative type of guy, so. I mean, of course, that's his perspective. And also, too, we talked about a lot of those people have the association, the socialization of white Europeans. Even though they're Jews, they claim that Judaism is a religion. They're coming from a white socialization perspective, which has a lot of times, depending on the individuals, can have the inherent racism embedded in that, you know. So that's one thing set aside from that. But the fact that this guy, Trump, is going to have the nerve to tell some of these folks that they're being disloyal to their own homeland because they choose to support or vote for Democrats is really the height of arrogance to me, you know, for someone to do that. I mean, everybody has an opinion, and you can have that opinion or whatever, but you sound like an idiot trying to dictate or trying to pass judgment on how people should determine their own destiny, you know, and their involvement in it. And that's and obviously, you know, the reactions that a lot of Jewish groups have been saying that it is anti-Semitic for him to take that stance. But, you know, it's expected from this guy because those are the reactions of someone who's really trying to get people jacked up, you know, saying there are certain things and, you know, attacking the congresswomen and, you know, the whole nine. They hate America and they want to see us destroy Israel. That's the type of things that clearly some of his not-too-attached supporters that are not too stable are going to jump out there and react. Certainly now, within the last week, they had the three guys that have been busted with all of this firepower and ammunition, and said that they wanted to shoot up places. I mean, this is like a once a week thing now that we're dealing with it.
Oh yeah. Well, the fact that we give millions of dollars to the State of Israel, and though that money is coming out of the
appropriated dollars that Congress puts into the well to restrict one of the signatories on the check that writes your puts that in your account, Israel, is bad form. The Congresswomen you restricted, their signature is on the check that you get from the United States,
Congress,
not the president. That's right. Congress writes the check.
Congress's signature. Yeah.
So it's like here, and we have to put that into perspective, because at the point at which you tell your boss that you can't come into his own factory, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give our support for that kind of restricted quid pro quo, especially with respect to the legislators who vote their money into your coffers. So Israel is playing us once again. We are on the bad side of history on this one, and it's not going to play out well as a result of the particular right wing policies that are being pushed by our current president and the current premier of the state of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm. You know, something that's come up a little bit more recently is, or just on the cusp on everybody's mind, is, you know, Biden's electability is sure in the stead. He's going to beat Trump. And, you know, the whole notion, I was talking about, I think we might have mentioned this in one of the previous shows, about the debate, how we all talked about how we didn't like Democrats going after each other. And, you know, there's a notion that some people have that, especially I saw it expressed by a couple of the younger analysts the other day, that Dems are being primaried. You know, why not go after Joe Biden? He has to prove his thing. And also, as well as other Democrats being primaried, challenged by the Democrats because of, you know, people feeling like they want to push some of the Democrats further to the left. But, you know, this whole notion that there's a younger base that feels that they need to be active and push out the established base or people that have been in office for a minute just because they've been there, I think is misguided, because it's not understanding the legacy of seniority. Usually a lot of the more progressives don't understand, you know, and they seem to be I've heard the notion thrown out about term limits and things like that. And it kind of works against us because, you know, when you've been out of power for a minute, once you get back in power, then the seniority and things like that work in your favor. And that's how the work, because a lot of people don't understand that, how the government has worked. You know, the party in power gets all the committee assignments, and they get the chair of peopleship in each one, all the various committees. And then they dictate and determine the issues, pretty much, that are going to be discussed or have a large influence in the issues that are going to be discussed and then eventually come before the Congress to be voted upon and debated and turned into law. And that understanding that process of how bringing bills up for a vote or letting bills go to committee and things like that is things that I think that the average kind of extreme progressive person who wants to talk about term limits and challenge and let's primary them, you know, people from their own party because they might decide they're not extreme enough or far to the left enough, and just to do it because you get caught up in that being the fad of the moment is not really understanding the process of government and how, you know, the stuff works. And also, too, I think society now with all of our kind of social media culture, people starting to see politics as a trendy thing to do. You know, a lot of people might want to get into politics more because that's the trendy kind of job or profession to get into for a little bit, as opposed to really getting into it in public service because that's your calling and that you have a need for that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, the truth is that government as an employer probably has the best track record of all of the businesses that employ and take care of their labor force. They play most by the rule book.
It's unfortunate that their minimum wage is not commensurate with that of the public sector, and that's kind of where some of where we are right now, Eric, is that the public sector, like our teachers, like our garbage collectors, like our boys in blue, boys and women in blue, who serve and protect the good ones, that is. I mean, people don't realize, or the mailman, their salary, they're out there working harder than most people do in a day, and yet their salary doesn't suggest that they have been receiving the benefits of their hard work. So much so, like for a teacher, for instance, why is it that teachers are having to buy their own supplies for their classes? Somebody explain to me what the hell is going on in the education department under Betsy DeVos, because teachers have been doing this for quite some time, and it's eroding the confidence that the parents, even the students, have in teachers. Because you can imagine, if you come to school, you don't have a book bag, you don't have an eraser, you don't have a copy book, you don't have a ruler, and yet you're being given instructions on algebra and calculus, and you're working with tools that are so out of date because they can't afford to give you the technology. We got a problem.
That's right.
A big problem. And then throw in the fact that you got lead in the schools. Lead problems in the drinking fountains of every school in this nation, especially of those of the inner city. I have been reading about Newark's problem with lead. And you can imagine,
right,
if there's lead in the pipes and it's going to the schools, do you know the damage that lead poisoning does to a young person? That is the
Absolutely.
Element of the prison to the pipeline, from school to the prison industrial complex called the pipeline. That's what happens. You got a bunch of social misfits walking around with their pants halfway down beneath their butt. You know, women, young girls dressing up like hoochie girls, and then no wonder they can't learn how to read, write, and add. Hello?
Because they don't have the tools to do it.
Right. Come on now.
Because they drank the water with the lead in it?
Some of that. That destroys your neurological. You know, it's funny to try to connect that dot, Eric, but think about it. From first grade on, and you've been drinking leaded water for 9 months out of the year.
For however many years you're in school. That's like 10, 12 years people are in school with young people. So you're exactly right. I mean, that situation of infrastructure all throughout the country is one that needs to be addressed. Yeah. In the Newark situation, you know, I hear people want to come down on the mayor. And I don't necessarily think that it is something that exhibits to him being derelict in his responsibility. I would assume that probably, as with anything, the infrastructure is something that goes over the course of time, and that there is some process or some mechanisms or system in place to check that and to see what is the maintenance on our pipelines throughout the city, our water pipelines throughout the city. But clearly it's a problem that is a problem throughout the cities, in the cities throughout our country. So, I mean, I think it's an issue of maintenance by the individuals who were serving at the time on a consistent basis, you know. And unfortunately, when you're the one who's in office during the time that the stuff hits the fan, you're the one that has to get all the blame. But I don't think it's showing any lack of his ability to be mayor. Once the crisis comes and then he has to handle it, that can be the barometer of his, of showing how he handles the crisis.
Right, absolutely. And that's part of the problem, because think about it. Flint, Michigan's problem didn't just start 5 years ago.
Right.
This has been in the pipe. Excuse me for a play on words, but that's been in the pipe for quite some time. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the implications are serious enough to warranted
arrests and charges, felonious charges, reckless endangerment of the public by a utility, as well as the state's governor's office, because these are contracts that are awarded for tax benefits and releases that ultimately you bring in these people, and then you don't want to have any, you wash your hands of the break that you gave corporate America to set up their industrial complex by your water side, and then they're polluting the water that then pollutes the people, and then the people got to go get bottled water.
That's an old playbook too that they've done. Allow the industrial sites and places like that to be developed on land close to areas of the inner city or where poor people live.
Yeah,
and that's something that's going on all throughout the United
environmental
States.
It has to be addressed, because think on this, Eric, this lack of support to the infrastructure cannot just be ascribed a happenstance. There's an insidious, vile, evil plot to this entire concept. You know, this doesn't just happen by accident. Okay?
Right.
I'm not buying into the accidental. Well, it's just an accident that happened. No, it's not an accident, because you've deregulated the industries that had to be monitored and policed to do the right thing. Now they're running rampant, and we don't have the regulatory systems. We don't have the employees to go after these folks. So there's a backlog of litigation so steep, it's almost impossible to take it on. That's where we are in this country. And I don't think it's going to get any better, which is sad. The sad part about this, Eric, is because the until we put more competent people into the agencies that are now have been severely collapsed as a result of people who are in this administration who are just outright criminals. You know, we have 17 departments in the federal government of high-level administrators who are now running without superior administrative position. That's very dangerous. And they also include the Defense Department. So we really got big issues.
Well, and a lot of the heads of the agencies that don't have people running it, that's one problem. But also, the other number of the other agencies, we have the other problem we have to worry about is him appointing people ahead of these agencies that are anti the agencies. You know, one guy ahead of the environmental agencies works for an oil company, you know, is going to be looking to change the rules on what can be designated as, you know, as national park lands and lands that are off limits for oil drilling. So, you know, they've been, you know, on the one hand where there's nobody in place on, and got the other hand where they're putting people in place to dismantle all the things, just like they're doing and changing the requirements for endangered species, you know, and all the effects that would have, you know. So, I mean, you know, this guy is just running everything back in the opposite direction.
And the big question is, when you have someone who's doing all of that to disrupt and render the federal government dysfunctional, there's a part of this that calls for a complete overhaul, actually, of the checks and balances system, because there is none going on, so to speak, when corporate America can dictate to the federal government, very much like the debacle with the 737 jet, the one that went down with the in that killed all those people. Where was that, in Ethiopia? And you know, because the department, the contracted agency that was supposed to build the right parts for the jet
refused to give the orientation to the pilots association that demanded that there was a problem with the equipment. So it wasn't just something that just happened. This was a situation that not only did the Grumman Air Company knew of the problem with the 737,
mm-hmm.
and they delayed providing support to the flight the FAA as well as to the pilots association. There was collusion here that kept that information from the cockpit, and it ultimately ended up in two disasters that were never should have happened. Never should have happened.
Right.
Because of deregulation.
Right, exactly.
And we have Ronald Reagan to blame for that particular one. You remember the FAA when they were going to go on strike, the air traffic
sure.
controllers, and he fired them, and he caused
sure.
a gap in the qualified personnel for people who were landing planes all across the country. See, people's
yep.
memory is short, Eric. That's why the history is very, very critical and important to understand why we're in the condition we're in right now. This stuff did not just happen overnight.
Well, their memory is short, and half the people aren't, as a student, aren't really paying attention, you know, and that's the other thing. Not only do we have short memories, the people who should have been paying attention or with those memories, they don't know, you know, they're not astute enough to know what's up. So, I mean, it's no wonder that the world can easily be pulled over people's eyes, especially when people want to maintain and stay in ignorance, you know, and certainly the desire to hate indicates that the individual is expressing a desire to maintain ignorant, you know?
Yeah.
You have to buy into wanting to continue to believe things, although you might hear things that make you question what you've believed all along. You know, it's like refusing to learn, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. So there we have one of the bigger problems is the agencies that we depend upon for government overlooking our businesses and our corporate community has been decimated because they have put freeze on the hire in that particular part of the federal government. So, you know, where else can we go with this, Eric? Come on now.
Well, I'm trying to look up this Greenland thing, right? Because the Trump wanted to buy Greenland, you know, and everybody's laughing at him. But I heard somewhere that it was something that Truman was considering back in during his administration, that if Greenland was for sale, and if that was the case, or if that in fact was something that was being considered, it doesn't quite make Trump's or the notion that Trump was considered that crazy if someone else was considering it. Of course, obviously, all the parameters and details leading up to the reason now are the reasons why people would laugh at him and would assume that he would know it's something that's looked upon as absurd because for whatever reason we didn't buy it back then, and to know that, you know, the United States could be bought, period, it was a surprising thing. But, you know,
well,
that
reminds me in history of what was known as Seward's Folly. Now, Seward's Folly was the purchase of Alaska at the time.
Right.
It was bought for $50 million. If my history reminds me of the facts involved, and Seward's Folly ultimately became the 50th state in the Union, or the 49th. Which became Alaska, correct. Now, here's the problem buying Greenland. Why are you going to buy Greenland if you can't give Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, Guam, and the District of Columbia its freedom? I don't want to know about no Greenland. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And that's valid because Greenland would be the new kid on the block, and then you're going to talk about populating? Populating with what? You know? No, no. It's a bad idea. Listen, my pastor on Sunday, I got to share this with you, Eric. My pastor on Sunday's sermon, he said, he took the first six chapters of Genesis. He said the first chapter was all great stuff. You know, the Lord God was producing and sponsoring and making man and making planets and earth and water and sky and sun. He said by the sixth chapter of Genesis, all hell had broken loose. Mankind was trying to build a Tower of Babel, and God had to step in and say, wait a minute, y'all can't be doing this. This is not the plan. By chapter 11, now you know he did. You know what happened with before. By chapter 11, after the floods, after destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, by chapter 11, man had messed up again and literally had to have a bankruptcy because that's when the flood came. Noah had everything was breaking loose, and it's like, isn't that funny? That's how life is in real life. You file chapter 11 for bankruptcy. So the story of mankind messing up is not new. We've been doing it for a long, long time. And because right now, this whole notion of climate change, I don't want to hear a single word coming from the GOP about it not being real. Okay? We got hell breaking loose all over the place because of the climate conditions. And so we got a bunch of ignoramuses sitting up there denying what's right in front of their faces.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, that wouldn't be a good business for them because, you know, that's really – it can be the only reason why you wouldn't be doing everything that you possibly could to make sure the climate is not damaged any further, because so we've already damaged it to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And you would do whatever it takes. I mean, you know, but – you know, because I mean the suicidal nature of what would happen if we don't get our act together and take care of the planet, and these people still, you know, I mean it doesn't sink into them. This is the only planet we have to live. We're going to continue to pollute it, make it up. So I mean, if that still doesn't get to them, then there's a deep problem. You know, I mean, I wanted to ask you briefly what you thought about kind of making a slight change as somebody, but still a Republican, but maybe a guy who's coming to his senses a little bit would be the Scaramucci guy, the Mooch, who's kind of is trying to rally the troops or the resistance in the Republican Party to upend Trump, you know? And,
well,
you know, there's
Scaramucci
some
reminds
Republican.
Me of some – Scaramucci as an operative reminds me of people like Giuliani and other pieces of the administration who have been brought out of the closet to make comments about what's going on. Scaramucci is getting paid to be that kind of operative. I don't trust him. I don't like him. You know, he's born of the same cloth that the administration and some of Trump's cronies have come from. So he's a shill. He's a plant. And
right.
I don't appreciate it. I don't respect him, and I wish they would stop spending their money on talking bobbing heads who really are only sycophants, and they're not journalists at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's kind of the nature of the 24-hour cycle. That's what I've noticed in trying to keep abreast and, you know, and having my TV on often, you know. But I mean, it's just some of the same storylines until a new thing breaks in another hour or two. You have three or four different versions of the same thing being said. And for me, in regards to Scaramucci and anybody else like him, I just like to stand back and watch them all have hopefully a circular firing squad where they can all take each other out, you know. And we know
well,
that it's not out of any.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But see, they play this
yeah.
game. This is a game that the talking heads and the
media, at least the television media, plays the ratings game with their news as if it was a reality show, as opposed to giving it as to a straight up as journalists who don't editorialize the facts. They just present it. But we get more Entertainment Tonight news than we get Entertainment Tonight.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, last night the biggest thing was, well, who are the stars on the Dancing with the Stars? Do you really care?
Do you really care
that Ray Lewis is one of the contestants, or that Mary Wilson, former Supreme, is one of the contestants? Do you really care?
Yeah, I didn't know that that had been released, but I could see that there are a lot of people that are more into, you know, the fluff and you know, the entertainment issues than, you know, things that affect everyday life, you know, and
right.
I guess
it's like
you have to.
Yeah, I mean, we got to, at some point, where do we draw the line where we have to recognize what's really going on in front of us and stop buying the hype of those who are selling us the three-card Monte, you know, charade? Because that's what's really, unfortunately, that's what we're getting spoon-fed with, is the charade and not enough of the truth. And so the truth has been, is what's being bastardized. And we really, that's why I like the format that we use, is that we can talk about the topics without having to editorialize. And yes, it's our opinions, but we're not just giving you paid opinions as you get on the regular news cycles. Because they,
right.
as you say, they just keep looping it, looping the same comments. And I'm like, why y'all hiring people who always talk the same lines?
And there's also a certain slant, you know, a way certain people can slant or direct the conversation in terms of the questions that they ask, or the follow-up questions that they ask or don't ask. And I'm often frustrated or find, you know, that there's certain things. It's almost like it kind of reminds me of the Democrats' whole kind of playbook sometimes. It's almost like, are we supposed to win, or maybe we're not supposed to win, judging by some of the tactics and some of the moves that we make, because surely if we were trying to win, we wouldn't make some of the moves that we're making. So, and you wonder. And then you have to realize that, you know, when you have supposedly in the democracy and you have everybody is allowed to have their own opinion, you have to make room or allow for the possibility of, you know, there being honest disagreements in how things should go. But sooner or later, you need to get people all on one page, and people need to understand that, you know, eventually, like, you know, the presidential elections, people, I'm not voting because I don't like either candidate. Well, that's the choices you get. It eventually comes down to two candidates. And if it's not the person that you were originally supporting and your main person, then it becomes a choice of the lesser of two evils for people. That's what I've always looked at politics and certainly the presidential election being. And you go for the person who you have the most in common with and agree with their program the most. That's what it boils down to. And in the United States, you got the two sides, Democrat and Republican, until, you know, the independents and get a lot stronger than they are. It's always going to be boiled down to that eventually.
Well,
and certainly
given where we are as the Democratic candidates are taking on each other in the different states right now, the polls are coming out suggesting that there are five that are worthy of staying on and that the other 15 should be starting to fall off the plate soon. But, you know, it's interesting because they I don't mind the battles that they're having right now. I want the best. I don't want anything secondary. I don't want a make believe candidate. I don't want a candidate who's flip flops. You know, just come straight to me, because you're going right now. We've had so many lies, we've had so many distortions, that we really have got to get back to truth and honesty. You know, is that possible? I certainly hope so. With Joe Biden right now is leading the pack, but Elizabeth Warren is coming up real fast. Bernie Sanders
right.
is kind of just staying. You know, Kamala Harris is up and over and under and up. But Buttigieg is on the rear bringing things up. And then there's Cory Booker, who can't get above 1%, but he's talking good. You know, it's like there's truth out there that has to be now narrowed so that we, the body politic, can get behind the defeat of whoever candidate is on the other side. If it's going to be Trump, then the project is defeat Trump, defeat Mitch McConnell, defeat the McCarthy, who is the congressional minority on the Republican side, defeat King out there in Iowa, and the King, Peter King over there in Long Island. I mean, you defeat the GOP, the Republican Party, because they're the ones who have really put us in this mess. And so you have to go top to bottom. And it's going to be interesting how, as you say, Eric, the Democrats begin to focus and fashion and up and down all over the state and across the nation how to defeat not just Trump, but the entire GOP. It's time to replace him. Got to go.
Yeah, well, usually what happens when you have high turnout for the presidential election, it usually affects the down ballot election. So what I've been saying and being on a Facebook kind of running discussion is that we need to raise the turnout. You know, I don't mind people going at it and making the distinctions in the primary, but we really need to not really bring down the front runner as much, and certainly not to attack his time during his involvement with the last Democratic administration, which was a successful one, and certainly by the first African-American president. For my taste, I wouldn't like to see people going at it like that. Just make the points of their individual reasons why their record is better than his, but my preference is that they stay away from attacking his record while he was a part of that administration. Certainly not, you know, like some of them were doing when they were jumping on the healthcare program, and obviously they were trying to draw the line of the distinctions, but I don't think it was helpful at that particular time. The main thing to me is that we have to get this particular president out of office. Like I said, if all those other people, if we don't go for Joe Biden, the only other path to me for others to win, they say, you know, Bernie Sanders can win, and I think Elizabeth Warren is even with him and can win in the latest polls, right? Bernie's got him by, what, 3? What did I write down? By 5, and Joe's got him by 7, and Warren is even with all the others are progressively down or a little bit less. The only other way for someone other than those three to be able to capture the White House, I believe, is through turnout. Democrats need to
Well, they're going
to
have to make coalition. There's going to have to be some serious coalitions with the minority, so-called minority, voting bloc.
Mm-hmm.
Asians, Hispanic-speaking communities, even the LGBTQ community, the coalitions that have to be built with these particular groups can defeat by number alone, but it has to be not just in the general. They really have to go out and get involved in local politics as the sheriffs, the local magistrates, the city council, the school boards, because the entire system's been under an attack and threatened. And it's the only way to cleanse it now, at this particular late date, is by way of our involvement. We have got to, the vote is ours, and it's the most powerful part of our being a democratic nation. We have the right to vote. We have a right to assembly. We have a right to protect ourselves, but it all starts with the right to vote. And if you don't vote, you don't count. It comes as simple
right.
as that. If you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. And part of the solution is you go vote. Yes.
Yeah.
So register. Now's the time.
Yeah, that is the thing.
One other thing I want to add on to that, Eric, is that I think that the Democratic Party has to really come to grips with its relationship to people of color, because the people of color represent the majority. And if you want to stop the racism, stop playing racial politics. The one side right now is playing racial politics. They're using the race bait card, the shade trees, you know, the ghosting, whatever you want to call it. It's the using, you know, race baited language and commentary. And it's really not necessary because you're running scared. What you really don't want to happen is people of color become a coalition against your particular political persuasion. There are more of us than them, and the Democratic Party has to understand they cannot win without our votes. It's impossible.
Well, and they have to change. They have to change up that whole kind of concept that many of them keep clinging on to about we've got to appeal and get some of those Obama voters that voted for Trump back to get the non-educated white male back. It's like, look, if those people wanted to be back, they would have come back. They would have never left.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, that whole notion that they threw out, that's been thrown out for the time that Trump got elected, he was one with also the votes, getting the votes of Obama voters who decided to vote for Trump because they didn't like Hillary or whatever crazy notion that was. I was like, how are you going to have though Obama voters this time were the change voters go to completely to the other end of the pendulum and vote for Trump? That does not make any sense. So that whole description or analysis of it from that perspective to me never really made sense. It didn't make sense. Just like, you know, the people always trying to find a nice way to describe, not to describe all of the Trump voters as racist. You know, when you have people of the same ethnic background, some of those folks that are actually racist saying, I don't think that all Trump voters are racist. Well, they're certainly open to racists. They're certainly friendly to racists. You know, so I don't understand how that is a positive or how that is kind of a, you know, condoning or making up for or explaining away their decision to vote for the guy. You know, that's always to me been a kind of, you know, someone clinging on to their own kind of racial identity and saying not all my people are messed up, you know, or at least hoping that the number is not as high as it is.
The policies that are restricting growth and development all across the board are the things that people need to be most concerned about. Because the racial politics is like a three-ring circus, okay? Because it's the policies that's putting everybody into the place and the box that they're in. So the policies of giving too much money to a defense budget and taking all the social programs away and cutting health, mental health support, and then you have a outbreak of gun problems and people killing, and then you're saying it's a mental problem, yet you don't have enough money in the mental problem places because you took the money out to give it to the Defense Department. You see, it's like it's causing effect, people. It really is. And you have to understand that you cannot continue to sustain one lie over another to make them both the truth.
There it is, Byron. That's exactly right. You get the last word, my brother. We're coming up on the end of the show.
Thank you. I mean, peace and love to everybody. And remember, the power is within you to make change happen.
Absolutely. And have a good show. Don't forget the people to go see Byron's show. And Brother
That's
Byron,
right.
We'll talk to you
next week. I'll be back in the cesspool.
All right. We'll talk to you again next week. Take care.
Yeah, my friend.
All right. Peace. And this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. My name is Citizen Payne. I'm the son. You can listen to us most times live, usually pretty much live, every on Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m., but you can also listen to the show because we are archived, my friends, archived, I tell you. So I'm going to get on out of here. We'll see you again next week. All right. Have a good one. See you later. Love you, Ma.